which players will be on the move as we approach the MLB trade deadline? How will it affect their fantasy value? We'll talk about that and much more today on Fastball Fantasy Baseball. I'm Taylor Tarter, and this is Fastball Fantasy Baseball. Let's get into it. So before we get into any fantasy baseball news, a couple quick newsy things to cover. So Lance Lynn is sticking around with the White Sox. I think this is an awesome deal for them and him. A two-year extension with the White Sox for $38 million. So, he's going to stick around there. He's going to be good for a couple more years playing on a good team. So if you're in Dynasty or Keeper leagues, this is a good sign here.
Yeah, it's a great, great look for the White Sox.
And we had this crazy scene at the Nationals-Padres game over the weekend. There was an active shooter outside of the stadium. I think the teams handled this pretty well. Some of the fans actually ran out of the stadium, which I don't know why you would do that. But, there were scenes of Padres and Nationals players pulling people into the stands. And, on the Padres side, they were pulling in their family members, but they were also, general fans kind of ran into. And Davey Martinez, the Nats manager, actually, when the people were in there, security and police were asking, are you family? Meaning, are you family of the players? And Davey Martinez, brings a tear to your eye. He goes, they're Nats fans. They are family.
Yeah, Davey, what a class act.
What a class act. Thankfully, as far as I know, nobody died. Still a very, very scary thing to see. Never want to see stuff like that happen. And then we had the MLB draft, which is going to be huge for, deep, deep dynasty leagues. A couple big names go in the first round. Jack Leiter went to Texas. You had shortstop Marcelo Mayer to Boston. And that's probably Bogart's replacement in a few years. Starting pitcher Kumar Rocker, best name in the draft, goes to the Mets. And I've been hearing that he's so polished and the Mets pitching staff is just so depleted and it's, they don't have any great talent in the minors that there's a good chance he could be up in September for a cup of coffee.
That'd be pretty wild. You don't see it too often.
No.
So that would be really exciting. The only knock I've heard of him is he's got some inconsistencies with his velocity. But you know what? We just want to – let's see this kid come out of nowhere and take the mound at City Park.
Yeah, certainly would be pretty cool. And then shortstop Brady House went to Washington. His stock skyrocketed after a great performance against the top prep arm in, for next year's draft. And reports on him are that he might have the best raw talent in terms of just hitting, fielding, speed among position players in the draft, which is exciting for me. But very raw, still has a long way to go, very young. And with that, let's get into a quick league recap. So I'm back to my winning ways. Thank goodness. Won in both my leagues. My 8-team head-to-head categories league, I won 6-4. It was a very narrow win on 4 of the 5 hitting categories, but I dominated strikeouts and quality starts. I was down in runs and RBI. And to me, runs are much easier to find on the waiver wire, consistent runs. You find those leadoff guys who, with good OBP, and you find runs. So I picked up Lurie Garcia and Luis Arraez, and these are guys I'm not planning to hold on to for a long time. They were matchup additions that, they filled a need. I'll probably look for some good streamers this week to replace them. And you and I both benefited from Mitch Haniger in different leagues, obviously. He had a really good week. I had a great week out of Robbie Ray, who we'll talk about in a minute. Also, at the beginning of the week, at the beginning of the matchup, I traded away Edwin Diaz and Freddie Peralta in that league for Trevor Bauer and Kyle Tucker. So my team needed RBI. And Tucker, to me, is one, a top 25 overall player, and two, is going to pick up RBI in the offense. So filled a definite need for my team. Peralta, I see, is somebody who's going to kind of tail off. We've talked about him before. His BABIP and home run to fly ball rate are both low, and so those things are going to catch up to him. But one of the big things that I think is going to catch up to him is his innings. And we've talked about this before. He's never had more than 85 innings pitched in a season, and he's already at 98. So, and he's been in the bullpen before.
You definitely could see that they're already starting to space him out. They skip a start this time. I thought they were at least going to have him come out of the bullpen a little bit in this time, but it looks like he won't start until the weekend.
Yeah, that's kind of why I traded. That's why I felt it was the right time.
Yeah.
The acquiring Bauer in this deal is total speculation. You know, we'll see what happens. But it's also a keeper league, so depending on what happens, he could be a trade candidate for me next season. You know, somebody who wants a pitcher, I can trade two to get one better. You know, one better keeper. And then in our 12-team points league, Muncy and Ryu were my highest scorers. I had some good streams like Detroit pitcher Willie Peralta. Some not so good ones like J.A. Happ in Minnesota. That was a bad start. We also made a trade, you and I, towards the end of the matchup. I sent Kelenic to you for Scooble. To me, you got upside versus upside. This was a particular deal that we had to do with like rookie rules and stuff in the league. So for anybody going like, that's not fair, it's out of whack, whatever.
Yeah.
We finagled.
Yeah.
And then I needed pitching depth. I have a bunch of outfielders. You needed outfield after losing Acuna. It worked out. I'm going to stay the course from this point on, stick to my strategy and try to keep winning. How'd you do last week?
Yeah, well, you know, mentioning the Acuna thing and lack of Shane Bieber, and COVID striking two starts from Aaron Nola, then also slowing down Alec Bohm, who was turning it around. Then he's the guy who basically poisoned the whole team with COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Poor performances from Framber Valdez, my boy. It all culminated into like a pretty sloppy 28-point loss. But for some miracle, I am still in second place, so I'm not sure how much more water this ship can take, but playoffs are only 4.5 weeks away. Top two teams get a bye week, so I would love to secure a bye week, but to me it's not essential. ESPN is telling me I have that 99% chance of making the playoffs, which who knows how reliable that really is, you know, but it makes me feel good. All you got to do is get into the dance. And the most important part of that is, to me, is not necessarily seeding, but having a properly constructed roster, which is what I'm going to be focusing on for the next 4.5 weeks. Heavily thinking about which available relievers will be closing for their respective teams come the playoff time. Because you'd love to buy a guy without having to trade anybody. And benefit from it greatly.
Yeah, and that's something we'll get into a little bit later. We're going to talk about, you know, the different trade candidates that are out there. Some of them are relief pitchers, and so we'll kind of get into what's going to happen with that in a little while. Right now, let's look at which players had the best Week 14 performances. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. For this segment, I want to cover one. We're going to cover one surprising player here, and then we're going to cover three studs who underperformed in the first half. So, you know, it's not surprising to me that we're going to see them on this list of the players who had the best matchup matchup 14, but I'll talk about why I'm going over them in a minute. So the first player is Toronto starting pitcher Robbie Ray, who went 13 innings pitched, zero ERA, 0.59 whip, five hits, three walks, 19 strikeouts, two quality starts, and both of them were wins. He won versus Tampa, which is a good win. He won versus Texas, which doesn't surprise me too much. Now, how is he doing this after two subpar seasons? Well, he's maintained a high strikeout rate, 11.5 strikeouts per nine. The key for Robbie Ray has always been control and command. And he's got his walk rate down under 3.4 walks per nine for the first time in his career. And it's in the twos, which is Toronto figured something out with him. They unlocked something with him. I do expect some ERA regression for him, 268 BABIP. He's got a couple pitches outperforming their expected stats. But his home run to fly ball rate is about 7% above the league average. So he may give up more hits, but I expect the home runs he's allowing to decrease a little bit over the season. He's also getting more ground balls than he has in the last three seasons. The slider's working really well. He's got nearly a 50% whiff rate on his slider and his curveball, which is insane. It looks like Toronto figured something out with his delivery or whatever. I love Robbie Ray, and he's on my list as a top 25 starting pitcher the rest of the season.
This is the version of Robbie Ray that everyone expected to see in like 2016.
Yes.
He was being like drafted in the top 40 players. Everyone was super high on him. So I just been continuously burned by him and always second guessing a good start from him. But you can't deny it any longer. Robbie Ray looks like he's for real.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have him on a team. So happy. So happy somebody dropped him in my league so I could snag him up. All right. So these other three players, top players, not surprised to see them doing well. The reason I'm going over them is because, you know, I've mentioned before, I'm in like different groups on Facebook, fantasy baseball related, regular baseball related. And I always see people like, you know, I'm trading Mookie, I'm trading Acuna, I'm trading Tatis. And it's like, why are you doing that? They're the best players. You know, so one player like this is Freddie Freeman, who had an awful start to the season. Yes. But you don't panic on Freddie Freeman, right? So in the last matchup, he went 14 for 35. That's a 400 batting average. 10 runs, 4 homers, 8 RBI, and a steal, right? So he had this bad start, but it was clearly BABIP driven, right? And his BABIP is still 30 points lower than normal. His average now is at 282. People were freaking out when he was hitting 220 in the first couple months. He's going to bat 300 the rest of the way. This is the Freddie Freeman we all expected, right? He's an elite hard contact hitter. His home run to fly ball rate is right around his norm. This is the Freddie Freeman we expected. If you hung on like you should have, you're benefiting. He's basically, you know, I'm bringing up these players because I cannot believe people bailed on them early in the season. And, you know, why draft a guy top 20 and then give up, right? I never am going to understand that. Never. Another guy like this who I saw in a lot of trade posts is Mookie Betts, who last matchup went 16 to 35 for a 457 batting average, 14 runs, 4 home runs, and 9 RBI. And like Freddie Freeman, you know, it was another BABIP-driven slow start. I have him as my number one outfielder the rest of the season. He's already showing signs of picking it up. You know, this is why it's important to understand the data that we talk about in this podcast, because the data tells the story, right? His BABIP is still suppressed. Now, I wouldn't expect a 300 plus average rest of season from him, but maybe like 290s. His home run to fly ball rate is right on his career norm. So at this point, his pace is looking like maybe he finishes around 25 home runs, maybe a little bit less, but the steals look good. So there's still lots of value. You know, it's not his best season in terms of hard contact, but he's still producing really well, especially in this last couple of weeks. So I'm not worried about his hard contact. I'm not worried about him like not hitting home runs. But again, you know, this is a player you should not be trading away.
Yeah, and BABIP is such a strong candidate to evaluate players, and particularly for a player like Mookie Betts, who has many years under his belt, and you have lots of data to compare a slump in BABIP to. It's a great practice for trying to scope your league for players who you know are going to turn it around, and you can get it at a discount. So in the future, or at this deadline that's coming up, you know, use BABIP as a very strong tool to acquire players that you know will turn it around.
If you had, let's say, two or three data points you're looking at, your top two or three data points you're looking at when you evaluate a batter, what are they?
BABIP? Personally, barrel. Not barrel rate, but the amount of barrels. Because then you'll know how many at-bats he's getting to. If he has a lot of barrels, not necessarily rate matters as much as having exposure and opportunity to obtain the barrels. And then hard contact. They're the three that I always try to check out.
Yeah, and that's basically the same for me. I look at barrel rate rather than amount of barrels, but you know, it's
half dozen.
Yeah. So, but like those are telltale signs, right? You want to see, is this person making, you know, hard contact, right? And then what's happening when they make hard contact?
Yeah.
Right. And so when we say, you know, that's the reason why I bring these things up. That's the reason why they're in every like evaluative thing that we do on here, is because they're so important. They help tell the story. The last player here that we'll go over is Juan Soto, Washington outfielder, who last matchup went 15 to 37 for a 405 average, 13 runs, 5 home runs, 11 RBI. And, you know, fantasy managers were understandably frustrated with this first half, not hitting home runs. You know, he wasn't as productive as you wished, but now we're starting to see the real Juan Soto, right? The BABIP is finally normalized. The hard contact's starting to look better. And his biggest problem in the first half was launch angle, which was a super low 5 degrees, right? Typically you want 12, 13, 14, 15 or higher, especially for like home run hitters. So naturally he's got a 54% ground ball rate and a 26% fly ball rate, which are problematic for hitting home runs.
Yeah.
Lots of people worry about the home run derby messing up batter swings. But one thing Soto said when he got asked about that exact thing, he goes, I want my swing to be messed up. I need to loft the ball more. I need to get the ball in the air more. And last week, especially, we started to see this happen for him. I'm thinking 30 home runs rest of the way. As he gets this figured out, you know, the home run pace is going to come up. He's going to bat 300 the rest of the way. And, you know, if Mookie is my number one rest of the season outfielder, Soto's my number two. And if you didn't give up on him, enjoy your championship run. All right. I'm going to get off my soapbox now so we can cover some COVID news.
Coronavirus!
By this point, probably everybody listening knows that Yankees outfielder Aaron Judge tested positive for COVID. He likely had it at the All-Star game, which is nuts. Four other Yankees players tested positive. Their catcher, Higashioka, couple relief pitchers, Wandy Peralta and Nestor Cortez, and their third baseman, Urshela. That caused the game versus Boston last Thursday to be postponed. And this comes a few days after, like you mentioned, Philly third baseman Alec Bohm tested positive, Nola quarantined, but he came back. There's also a St. Louis reliever who's not fantasy relevant who also tested positive. This is still an issue, right? Be safe, be responsible, wear a mask if you haven't gotten vaccinated, get vaccinated if you haven't gotten vaccinated, and this will stop happening. So let's go over some injury news very quick.
Ouch, baby. Very ouch.
So this is probably the worst one, right? The biggest injury news is Mets starting pitcher Jake DeGrom got put on the IL with forearm tightness, and the team said he won't throw again until that tightness is totally gone. And he's been out with forearm soreness and forearm tightness, a little different.
Do different things.
And the Mets are being extra cautious with him because of so many issues this season. And the report yesterday, and like, I guess probably early this morning, is that he is still not throwing, but he's feeling better. So that's a good sign that he's feeling better. But there's still obviously no timetable. You also have Lindor out as well, who we'll talk about in a sec. But, you know, and we'll also get into this, but a little bit later. But this certainly opens up the NL East for a really close division race.
Yeah.
And, you know, teams like Atlanta, Washington, and Philly all could be buyers at the trade deadline. But we'll get into that later. Another pitcher who's out is Atlanta starter Ian Anderson with shoulder inflammation. No structural issues, but he's getting shut down for 7 to 10 days, and then the team's going to go from there. And I don't know if this is something that you've noticed, but shoulder issues, especially like shoulder inflammation, has been a huge problem for pitchers this season. This is like the 8th or 10th guy who's gone down, you know, because of shoulder inflammation. And my guess is lack of use last season is catching up with some of these guys. You know, the arms weren't ready for heavy use. This is the same problem that I've brought up about soft tissue strains and tears and things like that. Except, you know, this is wear and tear on pitchers because they didn't use anything last year. Another pitcher out is Miami starter Pablo Lopez. He's out with a rotator cuff strain. There's not much news yet on the timetable, but rotator cuffs are really nasty injuries. It's not good news for Miami. You know, they lose one of their many talented young arms, but they do have a lot of arms in the minors who I think we're going to see anyways, because they're going to have to replace guys like Trevor Rogers and other, you know, young guys in that rotation. So look for Braxton Garrett, maybe Edward Cabrera to have a role here as the season winds down. You know, they also are going to want to see what their younger guys have in the minors. So,
sure,
you know, just kind of like incentivizes them to call them up a little earlier, probably. Now we mentioned him, Mets shortstop Francisco Lindor. He has a grade 2 oblique strain, which is a moderate strain. But this is still probably like a total of like 6 weeks at least he's going to be out, right? 3 weeks for rest, a few weeks to ramp back up, rehab game, right? So there's a chance that he's out the rest of the season, you know, because we don't really have that much more to go. Right, we're getting down to the end of July next week.
I heard a reporter ask him if he was going to play again this season. He said, "Of course, man, I'm not dead."
That's funny.
So he's got the mentality, but you know, sometimes your body and your mind don't link up.
Yeah. So, you know, this is a tough situation. You know, you got to hold on,
You're not getting rid of Francisco Lindor, even if you have nine players that are injured on your roster.
Yeah, and even with him having a down year, he's just a stud. So, but this could make the trade deadline interesting. Do they think that Lindor is going to, you know, does the Mets front office think Lindor is out for the rest of the year? Do they try to trade for Trevor Story or Javi Baez? You know, guys on a one-year deal to fill that void, make a World Series run, you know? We will see. Boston starting pitcher Chris Sale, he made two rehab starts, and he's probably got two or three more to go, and then he's going to get called up to the majors, which is pretty incredible, pretty exciting. I see him as a top 30 starting pitcher rest of season. As long as he stays healthy the rest of the way, he's throwing 97.
Yeah, I heard that. That's crazy. I wonder how his location is, how his accuracy is going to alter, or if it will at all.
Yeah, that'll be very interesting. And that rotation needs him too. A couple other updates for you. Chicago White Sox outfielders Luis Robert and Eloy Jimenez. So Robert took batting practice and did light outfield work over the weekend. And then Eloy has been doing rehab assignments. Eloy could be back any day now. Robert's still at least a couple weeks away, but this is really exciting and for me, unexpected. I didn't think these guys were going to be back this season. I had no expectations of them coming back this season.
What a huge boom to their lineup. If you get these two guys back, there's no way you saw this coming.
They need it so bad. They've had so many guys get hurt.
Yeah.
Houston third baseman Alex Bregman, he's still rehabbing his strained quad. They don't have a timetable for his return.
It's a brutal lost season for him.
Yeah, and thank goodness I traded him when I did. Kansas City shortstop Adalberto Mondesi swinging now. He's coming back from a strained oblique. I still worry about him staying healthy rest of the season. I would not want to roster him. Talk about another lost season. And then Angels outfielder Mike Trout and third baseman Anthony Rendon. So there's no rehab assignment scheduled yet for Trout, but Joe Maddon said that his calf is close to 100%. So you got to imagine maybe two more weeks for Trout at a minimum. And then Rendon, another lost season here. He had a setback in his hamstring injury, and the likelihood is he's probably out several more weeks. It's been a really disappointing injury riddled season for him. I don't think I'd take his value down in like dynasty or keeper leagues, but if you're in a redraft league, like I'd be a borderline getting rid of him if I was running out of IL space.
Yeah, if you need the space, I would have already probably cut.
Yeah, so probably won't help you much more this season. But he's one guy who I am betting in next year's drafts, people, you know, tick him down a little bit in value, and he loses some spots in ADP, and I will happily take him next season. You know, five rounds later,
yeah.
Then he went this year, you know, so this year does not worry me too much for him for next year. Dodgers starting pitcher Clayton Kershaw, he's working his way back from a forearm strain. He's throwing, he should be back in early August. And then our last one here, Washington starting pitcher Steven Strasburg is still experiencing nerve issues in his neck. He threw a simulated game the other day and said he didn't feel right afterwards, so he's getting shut down again. If you're in a redraft league and you haven't dropped him yet, it's time to drop him. And I'd honestly, consider dropping him in all but like super deep dynasty leagues, because this is like a significant issue.
He's always hurt.
Yeah, and this is like beyond his normal stuff, because there's like no answer to this.
So weird.
So we'll be right back to give you our favorite streamers for the week ahead, as well as which players we think might be on the move by the trade deadline and how those moves could affect your fantasy teams. So stick around and we'll get right into that after a word from our sponsor.
Am I streaming?
So we got a couple shallow league streamers for you here. These are players who are available, you know, widely available. And, you know, in, you'll probably be able to find them in 10-team leagues or smaller. So Boston's starting pitcher, Eduardo Rodriguez, has a good matchup against the Yankees on Thursday, tomorrow, the 22nd. But I like Eovaldi versus Yankees on Friday better. Cincinnati starter Wade Miley plays the Cubs next Tuesday, the 27th. And that's a good matchup. Houston starting pitcher, especially as the Cubs start trading away players. Those games against Cubs look a lot better. Houston starter Jake Odorizzi has a really good matchup this Friday, the 23rd, against Texas. Oakland starter Cole Irvin has Seattle this Sunday, the 25th. That's a really good matchup. St. Louis starting pitcher Kwanghyun Kim has Chicago on Thursday, tomorrow, the 22nd. And he's got Cleveland next Wednesday, the 28th. So you could pick him up today and use him twice in the next week.
And in deep league streamers, there's two guys I want to focus on. I really like Logan Webb on Thursday against the Dodgers. I trust what has been happening to that staff in San Fran, and they've been slowly stretching out Webb over his last few starts. He had a big break there in the middle for being on the IL stint, but his three starts prior to the IL stint were very good. Andrew Bailey is the pitching coach over there. I know you'll back me up entirely here, Taylor.
Oh, for sure.
It's just incredible what the juice they've been squeezing out of these guys. So – Give me all that Logan Webb, who will also not only, so he's not pitching just against the Dodgers tomorrow, but he's pitching against them again next week.
I was just gonna say that pitching coach is doing incredible things with that staff, and I'm not gonna be surprised. And they're in first place in the NL West, in the West, which is incredible.
So just for a second, I think that the Dodgers may have taken first.
Oh, they did?
Walk-off homer last night, Will Smith. Walk-off three-run homer. It was awesome.
Well, the fact that they're even in contention in that division is incredible.
That's true, 100%. Yeah.
And I am so not going to be surprised if they acquire another starter to bring in and you know, continue to dominate. But we'll get into that in just a couple minutes.
Yeah, shout out to Andrew Bailey, too, who's a South Jersey guy who I played against in high school.
No way.
Called a six, very cool. So good for you, buddy. Love it. Also, I want to focus on Merrill Kelly, who has a start against the Cubs on Saturday. Alec Mills is his opponent. But you got to consider that the Cubs may be turning out a soft lineup leading into the trade deadline week. So throw your Merrill Kelly starts out there.
Yeah, I would even say also Alec Mills could be a good option against Arizona.
Well, of course, yeah, anybody against Arizona is worth considering.
So finally here, we're going to get, we're getting close to the trade deadline. The MLB trade deadline. So we want to go over who we think will be on the move and look into the fantasy impact of those moves. The MLB trade deadline is 4 p.m. on July 30th. That's 9 days away. We're expecting several big names to be on the move. We've already seen Jock Peterson get traded away from the Cubs. They're expecting to be big sellers. So let's look at some players who may be on new teams next week and what's going to happen if they move. So one team that's expected to sell is Arizona. Last week, we interviewed Diamondbacks reporter Nick Pecoro, and one name that he mentioned that could be a potential trade candidate is second base, third base, Eduardo Escobar. So he's demolishing the ball this season. He's got 20-plus home runs, 40-plus runs, over 60 RBI. He's batting about 250, but with that low kind of suppressed BABIP, he's going to end up producing really well for a new team. He's got good, not great hard contact, but he's the type of player whose power is going to do well anywhere he goes. You know, maybe a slight downgrade depending on, you know, if it's a really extreme pitcher's park. But teams in need of second base and third base, you have Tampa Bay, Toronto, depending on how long of a leash they want to give Kevin Biggio. If Bregman's going to be out a while, maybe Houston are bidders. San Francisco could use some depth there. Milwaukee. Washington is a big candidate for a second base, third base type player. They've been kind of like piecing it together. And this would give Washington some stability at the hot corner, especially since Starlin Castro is basically – been removed from the team because of domestic abuse stuff and getting put on administrative leave. I think he goes to Tampa or Washington. I like him most to continue producing in Washington or San Francisco or Milwaukee, some good hitters parks, you know, teams with offenses that can help, you know, help him score runs or RBI. If he gets traded, you need to pick up Geraldo Perdomo, who is a prospect in Arizona's system. Somebody else that Nick Pecoro talked about. He is developing great discipline at the plate. He's got more walks than strikeouts in his career in the minors, which is very, very good. He's a great steals guy. Power is expected to come. He's a good sort of dynasty name to look into. Also, Josh Rojas is going to get more guaranteed playing time rest of the season if Escobar goes too. Minnesota is a team that's having a disappointing season, surprisingly. And I think they're going to be sellers too. One player who I see on the move is Jose Berrios. He's quietly having a good season. About 9.5 strikeouts per nine, but that's kind of like fluctuated all season. He's got a mid-3 ERA with his BABIP and home run to fly ball rate pretty normal. He looks legit, and he should net a pretty good haul for Minnesota. There's plenty of teams that need pitching. Atlanta, Boston, the Mets, Toronto, San Francisco, San Diego, Philly, Washington – all could be looking for pitching. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously he's going to get a boost from a team like San Diego, you know, historically a pitcher's park. I would say he gets a slight downgrade if he goes to the AL East, because there's a lot of hitting parks there, a lot of good offenses. So to me, the best spot for him fantasy wise is going to be if he goes to an NL East team. And a lot of reports out there have him tied to the Mets. You know, these are good, like neutral or pitcher ballparks. The division isn't as great. So it's better for him to pick up, you know, wins or quality starts in those, on those teams.
I was trying to figure out what his contract situation was, because I guess, so I'm looking it up right now, because he should net a pretty good return.
For the Twins,
who are 15 games under 500. the Tigers have a better record than the Twins.
It's really bad.
I mean, that's incredible. They're five games better than the Twins. Nobody would have said that coming into this season. Ridiculous. So Berrios looks like he signed a 1-year extension for $6.1 million. I wonder if he's going to be a restricted free agent, which would net them a little bit more in return, so that the team that they trade him to has a little more control. Or it's going to be interesting. I think he would garner them a pretty good haul, though.
Yep. And then another pitcher for Minnesota that is very likely going to be on the move is Taylor Rogers, who's been starting to take over the closer role there. He has a 3.52 ERA right now, but he's pitched into some bad luck. He's got a very high pitching BABIP, and he's got striking out 13 batters per 9 innings. So you know something is off there if he's striking out that many batters and has a 3.52 ERA. But you know, we mentioned this a little earlier. He's probably not going to close on the team he gets traded to. Right, if he gets traded to a contender, you know, they're generally not going to have him closed. Or, you know, like if he gets traded to the Dodgers or something, right? Kenley Jansen's the closer, period. So this is one of those things where almost any time a reliever gets traded, unless they're a very, very top reliever, you basically like you lose them if you're rostering them. So you're going to drop Taylor Rogers if he gets traded.
Yep.
Now, if he does get traded, this is where we come in. Hansel Robles, Tyler Duffy, right? Those are the names to watch. You know, in Minnesota, if and when Rogers gets traded. So Texas is another team expected to sell. Kyle Gibson, I think, is going to be on the move for sure. He's outperforming his metrics right now. His BABIP and home run to fly ball rate are super, super low, and he's only striking out a little over 7 batters per 9 innings. So wherever he goes is likely going to get a worse version of him than Texas got. But good for Texas on being able to capitalize on his season, right? To me, you know, all the starters here that we're going to mention have all the same projected places to land, right? Because, you know, basically everybody needs every contender is going to want to add a starting pitcher, right? And this is total speculation, but he feels like the type of guy that like Atlanta would trade for, like Washington or Toronto or Boston. San Francisco, right? A short-term deal. He's cheap. He's not going to require a lot of top-level prospects. I know as a Nats fan, we don't have a lot of top-level prospects. So, you know, he's a guy you don't need to be an ace. And wherever he goes, again, you know, it's going to matter too much fantasy-wise where he goes. Even if he stayed in Texas, I would expect him to get worse over the rest of the season.
Yeah, the best parts of Kyle Gibson's season are already over.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, to me, outside of top 75 rest of the season, top 75 starting pitchers rest of the season, no matter what. But one player who could really matter here at the end that might get traded is outfielder Joey Gallo. He's never going to win a batting title, but man, does he put up some great power numbers. We talked about him last week, so I'm not going to dig in too much, right? His power is going to play anywhere he goes. I'm not worried about him, you know, losing anything anywhere. He's going to be very highly coveted at the trade deadline. And what I'm looking for is this is another good dynasty name for you. I wonder if Texas calls up an outfield prospect. They have Steele Walker, great name. his reputation in the minors is that he's a very polished hitter. He's got a good approach. He hits the ball hard, can pick up some steals, lefty bat. So basically Joey Gallo light. Miami is another team that, you know, is looking like they're going to sell again. Outfielder Starling Marte, right? The power hasn't been great this season, as you know, despite, you know, some of the best hard contact metrics of his career, go figure. But he's got horrible launch angle. So this year he probably doesn't get to 20 home runs unless he goes very, very, you know, hitter friendly with his new ballpark, New York. Like if he goes to the Yankees, a lot of reports are that they're going to try to trade for him. That could see an increase in his home run, but he's really got to get his launch angle up. Couple teams, Philly, Chicago White Sox, Houston, Oakland, the Mets, Milwaukee, San Francisco, Atlanta, Boston, all have room in the outfield for Starling Marte. I think he's going to have his best numbers if he goes somewhere like Boston, where, you know, it's a very hitter friendly park. I would say, you know, downgrade him if he goes somewhere like Oakland. Jesus Sanchez is a Marlins player who I think gets a value bump with Marte gone. You know, he's going to get more playing time. He's hurt right now, but should be back soon. I would also expect prospect JJ Bleda to get the call. He's not having a great season in the minors right now. He's in Double A, and I think he's batting under like 200. But who else do they have? You know, yeah. He's got a good approach historically. You know, that's the book on him. Good power, so he's a name to watch in Miami. And then relief pitcher Yimi Garcia. To me, this is like Taylor Rogers from Minnesota. He's a reliever who's not going to have the same value, you know, wherever he goes. So if you do have him for saves right now and he goes, you're going to have to drop him. I would look at names like Dylan Floro or Anthony Bass as closers in Miami, but I also wouldn't expect – I also wouldn't be surprised if they go, like, closer by committee there. Pittsburgh probably sells off a few more pieces. But one I think is all but guaranteed to go is their closer, Richard Rodriguez. You know, again, guy you want to plan accordingly if you roster him. There's no clear successor there, so I can't give you, like, I got nothing for you there.
Don't even roster a Pittsburgh reliever.
Yeah. And then one of the big teams here. There's lots of rumors swirling about Chicago Cubs selling off major players. A couple players rumored to be on the chopping block. You've got Chris Bryant. It's been a season of peaks and valleys for him, right? Slow start, hit a hot streak, slowing down again. BABIP has, you know, been up and down all season. It's low right now, so you expect the average to go up soon. Maybe he hits another hot streak. You know, he's putting up good hard contact numbers this season. Expect like 10 to 15 more home runs, no matter where he ends up. He has, to me, probably the widest range of places he could land because he plays, you know, he can play left field, he can play third base, he can play first base, right? And so I think there's going to be lots of teams calling the Cubs about him. His contract is up after this season, so teams will have to be okay with renting. I've heard the Mets connected with him most, but I think he would be a great fit in Boston. They need a lot of help, a lot of little holes filled there.
I'm surprised by the lack of talk that the Phillies are involved in the Chris Bryant. Because I really haven't heard them thrown around in it, but adding an outfielder would be, or, you know, a guy like Chris Bryant who plays anywhere would be a pretty big move for the Phils. And always you talk about Bryce Harper and Chris Bryant's relationship back in Nevada and stuff like that, which was the only thing you heard about years ago when they signed Harper was maybe one day they'll get Chris Bryant because they're such good buddies. But I haven't even heard any of that. So
my only thing with that, with Chris Bryant going there, is like, do they really need him? Because they have, like, are they going to have him play left field where McCutchen plays? Right. Then what do you do? Does Bryce go to center? Right.
Yeah.
Or, and then how does that front office feel about benching Alec Bohm?
Yeah.
Right. Well, because that's the other thing that would happen.
Yeah.
Right.
He just keeps his state of COVIDness and, you know, out. And that would be great for everyone.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they trade Alec Bohm to the Cubs for Chris Bryant.
Yeah. That's an interesting move.
I think Philly is going to go, if anything, if they buy, right? Center field.
Desperate. Center field so bad.
Probably relief pitching.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be three bullpen guys and a center fielder. That's the thing that needs to happen in Philadelphia.
Yeah. One move that I really want to see is – Anthony Rizzo get traded to Boston. Yeah. Boston needs a first baseman so bad. They need a first baseman. They need like a corner outfielder. Rizzo, he's had a disappointing year so far, but again, he's a player with a suppressed BABIP, so he has room to improve. Same with the low home run to fly ball rate. You know, rest of season projections have him around like 11 or 13 more home runs. I think that's low. His hard contact is among the best of his career. So if he goes to a hitter friendly park like Boston, I think he could explode in the second half. But will the Cubs actually sell him? Right. There's, you know, there's sentimental value there. Right. So Tampa, Milwaukee, San Francisco, I think aside from Boston, could all be in the mix. You know, if Bryant and Rizzo move, you get Patrick Wisdom back, right? He becomes a very valuable piece. And Bryce Ball, who they just got for Jock Peterson, becomes an interesting bat in Chicago as a first baseman. They don't really have a ton of depth at corner and field in their system.
I think Rizzo is the least likely to go. Because like you said, there's that sentimental value. He seems to be Mr. Cub. Totally different than Chris Bryant, they've had a like really tumultuous relationship with the front office, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of been – he's been in trade talks like since he's gotten to Chicago.
Yeah.
Another player who we think might be on the move is Cubs shortstop Javi Baez. He's one of two big name shortstops, like very big name shortstops that could be on the move by the deadline. Tons of strikeouts this year, but he's somehow managing a .244 batting average with potential to improve it. He's on pace for the most home runs in a season for his career. His launch angle is driving up his fly ball rate, and so the home run to fly ball rate is up. And all of that's legitimized by some of the best hard contact metrics of his career. Realistically, there are three shortstop buyers: Tampa, Oakland, and only if they think Lindor will be out, the Mets. If he gets traded, I think he's landing in one of three spots. Chances are he doesn't get traded. You know, maybe they are asking a lot. This is his last year of his deal. So wherever he goes, it's going to be a 2-month rental, right? So we'll see how much teams are willing to give up for him. You know, and maybe the Cubs are like, you know, maybe they don't want to do it, a deal. They don't get what they want, but we'll see. And if he does go, Nico Hoerner gets a ton of added value for the Cubs if he can stay healthy. And then last for the Cubs that might go is closer Craig Kimbrel, who is probably one of the only relievers that's out there who is going to close wherever he goes. You know, this is another player who I think ends up in Boston. I'd be curious to see if Boston offers something for a Rizzo Kimbrel package, because they fill some big needs for them. I guess closer isn't really a need in Boston, but I feel like you'd rather have Kimbrel in the ninth than Matt Barnes in the ninth.
Yeah.
Or Heath Hembry, you know? So yeah. He's a player where I'm not like worried about value dropping, you know, wherever he goes. I think he's going to have some regression, but that's going to happen, period. Even if he stayed with the Cubs, right? His BABIP and home run to fly ball rate are so low that regression is going to happen, right? So doesn't really matter where he goes to me. You hang on to Craig Kimbrel.
What a like rejuvenated year for Kimbrel.
Amazing.
I completely wrote off.
I haven't checked the numbers, but I would be willing to bet he was largely undrafted.
Probably.
Because he had terrible years. The last 2 years were bad.
They're horrible with the Cubs. I mean, it's just pretty crazy that he finally is the guy that they wanted him to be years ago. And now they're getting rid of him.
Yeah. And then one last team here who we expect to be sellers is Colorado. And, you know, last year they traded away Arenado. This year it might be Trevor Story. You know, he's the other big name shortstop that's likely to move. Now, this almost guarantees, you know, that he is going to lose production here. Because you expect that Story leaving Colorado is going to have the same effect as Arenado leaving Colorado. This is something I talked about in the off season, where, you know, it's you get this BABIP boost in Colorado, and so you get a batting average boost in Colorado, right? And if you look at Nolan Arenado's season, this is 20 points lower than his home batting average, right? He's like a 280, 290 Colorado hitter. And what we're seeing this year is like closer to 270, 260, right? That's something I expect to happen to Trevor Story when he leaves Colorado. Same thing for home runs, right? 5 to 10 home run decrease. You know, those are the biggest side effects I expect. And Story's BABIP is way down this season, which is why we're not seeing that typical 280 to 290 average. If he gets traded, right, it's going to level out somehow, but I wouldn't expect him to be, you know, I wouldn't expect his batting average to go up that much if he leaves Colorado. Maybe he finishes like 270 end of season. Lots of rest of season projections have him around like 11 home runs the rest of the way. But if he moves to somewhere like Oakland or Miami, I worry about him hitting that many home runs the rest of the year. You know, he's already having issues with hard contact, which is part of the reason for the low home run numbers. But like Javi Baez, I think Oakland and Tampa Bay are good candidates to get him. And I'm including Tampa Bay because Wander Franco can play third base, where they don't have like anybody significant there, or second base, where they, you know, and Brandon Lau can play the outfield, right? So they have so many moving pieces that they totally could sign a guy like trade for a guy like Story or Baez.
Or kept Willy Adames and let him play a little longer.
Yeah. Oh man, he's doing great.
He's so good. I think he won Player of the Week last week.
I picked him up in a league. He's been amazing for me.
He's so good.
So if Story gets traded, I think you see more at bats for Hampson, Owings. But you know, that team has a lot of flexibility. Rogers could play more at shortstop. But I don't know that there's any huge fantasy upside for any of those players in Colorado who get more playing time. I will also be interested to see what some like borderline teams are going to do, like New York, Seattle, St. Louis. But we'll have to wait until next week to see that.
I think it'd be so cool if Seattle's just like, screw it, we're going for it. With just an average age of probably 23 years old in the roster, you know? Mitch Haniger's 28 and he's basically like the grandfather of the team.
Yeah, and everybody's like, oh, Oakland and Houston, they're going to win that division. Seattle's right on their tails.
Love it, yeah.
New York, the Yankees are still in it, even though they've had, you know, a rough season. And then that NL Central is pretty up for grabs. Milwaukee's been pulling away, but St. Louis isn't out of it either. So, you know, everybody's saying like, oh, there's like 10 teams, 10 guaranteed playoff teams, right? I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. We'll be back next week where we'll cover all the MLB trades and their fantasy impact, and we'll have a very, very special episode for you with a lot of cool information, some very, very awesome guests. But in the meantime, you can tweet us at FastballPod, reach out to us on Instagram at FastballFantasyBaseball, or email us at FastballFantasyBaseball@gmail.com. We'll respond. Your questions will make it onto the show, and we'll even shout you out, so drop your social media handles as well. Also, make sure you've subscribed so you're notified when new episodes publish. If you want more info from me, I'm currently writing baseball, fantasy baseball, and baseball betting articles for thegameday.com. So check out my articles there. You can also find me at creativesports2.com. That's the number 2. I have a column there called 3 Strikes. I publish an article every week. And finally, please give the show a 5-star rating. Each high rating helps move this podcast up the list on all the podcast platforms when people search for fantasy baseball. So it's something that really helps me and Matt out. Thanks for listening.